C2A. Number 25A.
Then we come to the next subtone of principle. We see at once a tone of principle, perhaps the early Christian era. Now she compares the early Christian era with the era to come. Did Jesus no more injustice than the later centuries? Have bestowed upon the healing Christ and spiritual idea of being. Now, we see the earlier Christian era, then the later centuries, now. Can you see the reasoning that she brings in, the development of the idea through time? Now that the gospel of healing is again preached by the wayside, does not the pulpit sometimes scorn it? So we have the counterfeit of principle is the pulpit. But that curative mission, which presents the Savior in its clearer light than mere words can possibly do, cannot be left out of Christianity. Cannot be separated from Christianity. Although it is again ruled out, it is ruled out of the synagogue. So we see here, it is the pulpit, it is the synagogue, it is the churches that do not let the idea come in. They excommunicate it, they put it out of the synagogue. That's what happened also with the idea that John Dolly brought into the Christian Science movement. It was not accepted. The church did not accept it and put it out of the synagogue. That was around about 1945. If we look into the statistics of the church in regard to membership, in regard to the number of practitioners, in regard to the number of churches, in regard to the subscription of the monitor, you will see something. You will see that the numbers went up and up and up until 1945, round about that point. From there, it went down and down and down and down and down. And the whole movement asked, why does it go down? Why do we have to close down the churches one after the other? Why do we have to give up the reading rooms one after the other? Why are there always less subscription in the monitor? Why are there always less practitioners in the journal? Today there are less practitioners in the journal than when Mrs. Eddy left us. So after 75 years of work, we have less practitioners in the journal. And they always ask why, when the answer is very clear. The synagogue ruled the idea out. The churches excommunicated the idea. They didn't excommunicate Dolly and us. They excommunicated the idea. And so the forward idea could not really bring more life to the church and make the church go on and multiply. So it went down and down and down. And it's going down. Always the same thing. It's always the counterfeit of principle, a church, a board, people in authority. They are the very opposite of principle. The very opposite of principle. And that always excommunicates the idea. Love always accepts the counterfeit of it. It excommunicates. Then we come to the tone of life, truth, and love. They go into each other. It's very difficult sometimes when it comes to the subtones of life, truth, and love to put them apart and separate them apart. They flow into each other. So we listen again. Truth, immortal idea, we have a tone of life, immortal idea is sweeping down the centuries. Did you notice that when we started with the whole tone of love as love, that it has always to do now with history, or let's say with the centuries, what is the prospect of the idea as it goes on and on, looking backward how it was at the beginning, then the later centuries, what is now, and how it goes on. So that flows right through it, because she wants to show that that plane of love has as a subtone, as love, that the definiteness that love will draw all to the point of omega, to the point of fulfillment. That the hand of the Lord is still stretched out and takes the idea and draws it and draws it and draws it over centuries and centuries to itself. So truth, immortal idea, is sweeping down the century, gathering beneath its wing the sick and the sinning. My weary hope. What a statement. And she left it in when she left us in 1910. My weary hope. It's nearly less than what Paul says, I hope against hope. My weary hope. She was so disillusioned that the students didn't obey. So disillusioned that she didn't find at least someone whom she could trust the development of the movement. She didn't find a single one who she felt would understand her textbook. And that naturally could be a weary hope. And you know why she got weary? Because she tried over a long time to find such a successor. Already in the middle of the 1890s, she was complaining that nobody would understand it, that she has no successor. Then tried out all funny things, like the Board of Education, the Board of Lectureship. Then she even had the funny idea of adopting a son who was not good enough and had to give up that thing. You know, tried everything. How could I really found the church so that it could go on, until finally she gave up. Said, well, generic man will be my successor. So one can see that weary hope. It's interesting that one reads so often about Mrs. Eddy at the end of her life that she always said, I'm so tired. I'm so wearied. That whole material church organization just weighed on her shoulder. That thought, what is going to become out of my discovery? Just as Jesus was thinking that it was really the last drop in the cup. Will the world understand what I have been teaching? Or has it all been in vain? These are very, very heavy questions. Those that weary me too from time to time, and say, how on earth is this idea going to survive? What shall I do? And at least I write books, even if they are not yet read, I write them because I feel at least I can write down black and white for the ages to come what I have really wanted to convey. So we always must have a true perspective of a pioneer like Mrs. Eddy, like Jesus. Not always to see them in all their glory and not thinking that they too have to go through many, many things that are heavy. So my weary hope tries to realize that happy day when man shall recognize the signs of Christ and love his neighbors as himself, when he shall realize God's omnipotence, can see here love, and the healing power, truth, of the divine love in what it has done and is doing for mankind. Always what it has done in the past, what it's doing, and what it will do. So she always takes in that last tone of lover's love, a great sweep of the centuries, and sees what is really going on in the world. Then she says, the promises will be fulfilled. See, very strong statement that seems to be full of certainty, and only a few lines before she speaks about my weary hopes. You have always to see those two sides in each one. Just as Jesus represented the dual nature as a mortal and as the Christ. And so we must always see the dual nature that still is in every human being, be it then Mrs. Eddy, be it then John Dolly. He also had that dual nature. That's natural. And so as each one of us, a dual nature, which in one side is very human and therefore speaks of the weary hope, and then somehow we see again the great, big, great vision, and then we are so definite and so certain and so hopeful, and hope against hope. This goes on, and it reflects itself also in the textbook. The promises will be fulfilled. When she says that, then she looks into that eternity where she says, the nature of being is love. Therefore, the nature of being is the plan of love. And as love, that nature of being says, I draw all to me. I draw all to me. You can be quite sure that I find ways and means through which the human mind has to go, through sorrows and through sufferings and through defeats. It has to go through this experience, but I lead it and I give to everyone those experiences that he needs, but I draw that one to me, back to the fulfilled sense of love. So that's what one always sees, what is the law in being. The time for the reappearing of the divine healing is throughout all time. That's naturally a point. It was always throughout all time. There are 2,000 years since Jesus introduced it, and after 200 or 300 years it was lost. It was lost. And it would have been silly at that time to say the same silly thing that we say, well, the idea cannot get lost. It's silly because it's true. In one way, the idea cannot get lost. But what's the use of it if it gets lost from the year 300 up to the year 1866? What about those 1300 years? Is that nothing? Just to go through the dark ages? Is that nothing? Shall this idea of Mrs. Eddy go through a dark ages again, just because we say, oh, well, you know, the idea, that cannot be killed, the idea will stay, the idea will be fulfilled, the idea of divine healing is throughout all time. Yes, that's true. What's the use of it if it gets lost for 1,000 years? It's always that point of not being able to see that the absolute and the relative must be one. That we have not just an absolute statement and can leave the relative or human situation alone. We have to see that the divine must overcome the human at every point. It doesn't say the divine is the divine, let the human be set aside. says, no, no, there must be a translation in that, so that we just are not thinking on cloud nine. And whosoever layeth, now this is the point of the human accepting the divine, and whosoever layeth his earthly all on the altar of divine signs, on divine signs, drinketh of cups, of Christ's cups now, and so he is endued with the spirit and power of Christian healing. So she shows what is the solution to it. Just to let it go, that it sweeps down the centuries, that's one thing. That's the idea of life. But that idea of life will not be demonstrated if at the point of truth here, one doesn't say, all right, I drink the cup, I go through what the chapter of Atonement and Eucharist has taught me, I go through it, then I am really bringing the age forward. Then we have the, and we are endued with the spirit and power of Christian healing. And finally, the last touch, love is love. In the words of St. John, he shall give you another comforter, that he may abide with you forever. That would be the solution, that there are not again really 13,000 or 16,000 years in between in darkness, where the idea is not practiced, where the idea of Christian healing is not practiced, and got lost and was buried into a church and church dogma and church policy and so on. So she said, there is a way out, really, that doesn't happen again. Namely, if you see divine signs, that stays with you forever. That does not get lost. And this comforter, I understand to be divine signs. But divine signs here is divine with a capital D. It's not divine signs with a small d, with a lowercase d. It's with a capital D, which means the textbook she called the textbook of Christian science. She didn't call it the textbook of divine science. But the comforter is divine science. That naturally includes absolute Christian science and Christian science, because these terms are synonymous, the terms, and their meaning are different. The meaning belongs to a category of being, to an ontological category, which says there is an infinite translatability from the highest to the lowest, so that everything is included in science, so that science touches every aspect of being, every aspect of even human existence. And that is how she ends that chapter. So the comforter is no more Jesus. The chapter started out with Jesus, showed that Jesus' atonement exemplified what? You have there a very interesting point, I would say. The chapter starts out that atonement is the exemplification of divine truth, life, and love. Let's rather read that text correctly. Atonement is the exemplification of man's unity with God, whereby man reflects divine truth, life, and love. And you have there those two levels of science. Namely, exemplification is always on the level of Christian science. You can only exemplify it on the level of humanity. Christian science is the relationship between the divine and error, between truth and error. So what Jesus taught and demonstrated that manners with the Father, he exemplified on the level of Christian Science. What? That he could reflect absolute Christian Science. That the impact, really, of what he was doing was always from truth, life, and love. The Christ in absolute Christian Science. And he reflected that on the plane of human existence, of material existence, as we have seen. So we have the starting point of Christian Science in the textbook of Christian Science, which says, but the plan of love wants to lead you from that standpoint of the interrelationship of the Christ in absolute Christian Science and the Christ in Christian Science to the point that you are willing to accept divine science. And therefore says, the comforter really is divine science. And I think this is true. I think I always think that everything Mrs. Eddy says is true. But I want to say, it's true, we can actually experience that. I think that chapter has given us a wonderful opportunity really to see that it can lead really us, the student, to first to the point of prayer where we fill our consciousness with the best divine qualities which we feel in the human, where we build on those wonderful qualities of true and pure desire, on those qualities of gratitude for God, of gratitude for life, truth, and love, on those wonderful qualities of being able to resist temptation and to resist sin, on those wonderful qualities to try to be honest within ourselves with what we know and what we say. You see, it's all in the human realm, but mobilizing the best qualities within ourselves, those qualities which have a divine hue in themselves, really having that spiritual understanding that always says, I go back to the source at the point of life, and always says in the point of truth, I can go into the closet and shut the door, I can shut out erroneous thought and let in positive thought, or that prayer which says at the seventh prayer, I can glorify in God, I can, in Him I can trust, I know that God is love and therefore will meet every human need. I know that that's prayer that's building up within our thought something very positive, not yet idea, it's the best in the human that is mobilized there. And then it comes to atonement and Eucharist and says, if I let the Christ work within me, then the Christ idea, that idea which God has, that plan which God has, the plan of love which God has, if I let that happen within me, and I don't put anything up that hinders that influx of the Christ, then that Christ will take me and will work within me to overcome everything within me that is not God-like. The divine will overcome the human at every point, so that the human will disappear to the point where in place of the human I begin to see the idea man. And I begin to see I'm one with the idea man. And as I begin to feel one with the idea man, that idea begins to work within me and begins to establish within me the idea of mind, the idea of soul, and spirit, and soul, and principle, and life, truth, and love, so that I finally feel that this idea is also at one with God. That I'm not only at one with the idea man, but also with its divine principle, love. And I touch divine science. I touch divine science that says, this is the only science. You know, on divine science, our science is divine principle, love, that point where where the subject leaves us. The comforter will be divine science. Yes. There is only 3 minutes, and I don't want to start a new subject, really. So, what I can do is this. We have taken also now the last great great main tone, love, in all its subtones. And some have asked me if there is also a law of the subtones running through that matrix 2. You have the matrix 2, you know, that one, which in the upper corner at the left-hand side says 2. Now, I have an old one. Well, the title is, yes, the title is Matrix 2. It's about the matrix of love in the 7. And so it's actually so that also through these subtones of love runs a law of the subtones, which is quite clear in a way. It starts always out with the subtone of mind, that we must have a heavenly mindedness. You have it here on the blackboard, where it shows that the first tone is always that we should have a mind that is heavenly, a mind that is ideational. Then that spirit, that this idea is the basis for spiritualization, and it's always a sense that there must be a line away from matter to spiritualization. If we are at the third point, soul, then we see that we must stick to that spiritual selfhood of us and not give in anymore. And if we do that, that then we can demonstrate science and build on science. If we do build on science, it has always one effect, namely life, that we are going forward, that there is nothing that can hold us back, that we are going forward, and no obstacle can stop it. That no rock-ribbed walls, and no grave, and no stone before the grave can stop it. Life has that irresistible power to go forward. And as we go forward, we establish in the subtone of truth, we establish really the true manhood. Always the sixth day of creation brings in manhood, and we have seen that then constantly we see how the true manhood is established. It was there where she introduced then the idea man, where man is seen as idea. And finally, the last subtone gives always a sense of universal blessing. Gives a sense that what we do individually will always have a universal effect. No matter if we see it or don't see it, the world will get the blessing of it. So this is the law of the subtones. Actually, you can put in these laws of the subtones in your matrix always on the left-hand side where you have those boxes open, and there you can put them in, and then you have a complete matrix. You know what I mean? If you write them in here, see? Then you get the matrix. So you have on the top really the main subtones of love, love as mind, love as spirit, love as soul, love as principle of life, truth and love, and down here how each one develops itself according to the law of the subtones. And all that makes it much easier, really, to flow along the word orders. Yes.